Hey, everybody. It is Wednesday, March 20th. Today is the International Day of Happiness, everybody. You're listening to the Mo News Podcast. I'm Osh Wanunu.
Yay to being happy. Okay, I am Jill Wagner. This is the place where we bring you just the facts.
Jill, I didn't feel that was a genuine call to be happy, but this is the place where we read all the news and read between the lines so you don't have to, and faux happiness from our Long Island Bureau.
You didn't sense the emotion. Okay.
No, I didn't sense that was genuine cheer for the International Day of Happiness, which, by the way, guys, is a real thing. The UN, of all organizations, has declared today, March 20th, the annual International Day of Happiness. Jill, it coincides, though, with the first full day of spring.
That's right. Congratulations to everyone, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. We have made it to the first full day of spring. And if you look outside, a lot of these trees, at least my magnolia trees, and I actually have a cherry blossom tree, already blooming earlier than ever.
Yeah, the cherry blossoms in D.C., which is an annual thing down there, they're blooming. Those of you in the Southern Hemisphere, fall is about to happen for you. You get spring in September. Us in the Northern Hemisphere, this is a big deal for us in March. It officially started just after 11 p.m. Eastern last night. So you had just under an hour of spring last night. Today, first full day. So hopefully the weather cooperates so you can celebrate with us, or I should say with me. Jill doesn't seem to be wanting to celebrate the International Day of Happiness today.
Who doesn't want to celebrate an International Day of Happiness?
All right. With feeling this time, Jill.
Woo! You know why I'm happy, Mosh? Because I'm coming into the office today.
Yes. Looking forward to seeing you in Brooklyn. Jill, we'll take pictures. Otherwise, as we've learned from Kate Middleton, people won't believe it.
Okay, with that, let's get to the news. The Supreme Court clears the way for Texas to enforce its controversial immigration law, at least for now. Online orders begin for the first over-the-counter birth control pill in the United States, and it comes as new numbers show that abortions in the U.S. have hit a recent high. Gas prices are back on the rise. How much we could be spending at the gas pump.
And it comes as the U.S. just set a world record, all-time record, for how much oil we're producing here in this country.
Which I feel like is maybe your favorite story.
I just like it because it surprises everybody. Yes. Every time I tell them about it, they're like, what? Really?
I totally get it. I understand why, sticking with the theme, that story makes you happy. To the Middle East, Israel is sending a delegation to Washington, D.C. to talk about alternatives to a Rafah invasion. And Donald Trump says that Jews who vote for Democrats, quote, hate their religion and Israel. Meanwhile, Japan's labor market has a lesson for the Federal Reserve here in the United States. Women can surprise you, we'll explain. Kate Gate continues. Turns out that photo of Kate Middleton on Mother's Day may not have been the only one doctored by the royal family.
Oh boy, they've opened up a can of worms.
And finally, Travis Kelce may have a new gig. And Mosh has on this day in history.
Jill, a big birthday for the Republican Party and Lucky Charm cereal.
Okay, let's start with the latest on the border crisis. The Supreme Court giving a big win to Texas, at least temporarily. On Tuesday, the court ruled that Texas can enforce its controversial immigration policy for now, as the courts will debate its overall constitutionality. So this allows Texas officials to enforce a new state law that lets them arrest and detain migrants who cross the border. I should note the three liberal justices dissented. This law is known as SB 4 or Senate Bill 4. It makes it a state crime for migrants to illegally cross the border, and then it lets Texas officials deport them. It is part of Republican Governor Greg Abbott's push to expand the state's role in immigration enforcement, which had always been the responsibility of the federal government. Texas passed SB 4 last year as a record number of migrants crossed into the United States through the border with Texas. The state arguing that it's within its rights to arrest migrants under the state war clause of the Constitution, which lets states act when it is, quote, actually invaded. But legality of this law has gone back and forth through the court. So let's recap the last couple of weeks. The law was supposed to take effect on March 5th. Then a lower court temporarily blocked it, saying that it could open the door to each state passing its own version of immigration laws. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit reversed that decision, saying the law could be enforced unless the Supreme Court intervened. And then, as we reported here on the podcast, Justice Samuel Alito, who oversees emergency requests from that Fifth Circuit, said that the law should not be implemented while the Supreme Court considers it. And then on Tuesday, the latest twist, the Supreme Court rejected a Biden administration request to keep that law on hold while it is being challenged in the lower courts.
So to recap here, the lower court said no. The appeals court said maybe. The Supreme Court said, hold on, actually, yeah, we think for now, but appeals court, figure it out quickly. And then, of course, to give you a sense of the future, this will go back to the Supreme Court.
Thank you for the recap of my recap, Moshe. It was needed. It's confusing.
It's very confusing. There's a lot of courts here saying a lot of things. We spent some time in the office yesterday trying to read through the decision here. Remember, when the Supreme Court rules on things temporarily, this is not them actually ruling on the case, but a temporary request here by the Biden administration to stop the law, they don't always have to give a reason. And four of the justices did not give a reason for deciding that Texas can do this in the meantime. Two of the justices, two of the conservatives, Kavanaugh and Barrett, said, we agree with the majority, but like, can you hurry this up? Because this is like a problem right now. And if this takes too long, we will again consider this. So right now, it's kicked back down to the appeals court, which is making a decision here on what is really an important issue, which is, does a state have the ability to enforce its own immigration law? For the history of this republic, going back 200 plus years, dealing with international borders is a federal responsibility. I mean, think about it. If New York had different rules on how to deal with the coast than California, then North Dakota dealing with the Canadian border, then Washington State dealing with the Canadian border, then Texas with Mexico, then California with Mexico, it would be a mess. And that's the argument here the Biden administration is trying to make, which is like, we can't deal with this. There's got to be one federal government dealing with laws on behalf of the United States. Now, Texas is saying, you guys are doing a terrible job at it, so we're going to do it ourselves. And by the way, Texas is apt to do that. Remember, Texas used to be its own country. And Texas does its own thing. Like, for example, the electrical grid in this country. There are 49 states on an electrical grid that are all combined, and then Texas has its own electrical grid. So Texas does tend to do its own thing. And in this case, for Governor Abbott there, he's been doing his own thing. So they passed this law of theirs that allows state and local authorities to do their own thing when they come across folks who've come into the country illegally in terms of detaining them or deporting them. They've made it a felony in the state. Now, immigrant rights groups, along with the federal government, say that this is illegitimate and Texas doesn't have the ability to do this. And the courts are figuring this out. And that's a bit of what you heard from three members of the Supreme Court yesterday. Remember, it's a 6-3 conservative majority. The three liberals on the court said, this creates further chaos and crisis in immigration enforcement in this country. Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson writing that they've given the green light, the majority has given the green light, to upending the longstanding federal-state balance of power, and it will sow chaos. So this is just the latest here in terms of the fight here between the Biden administration and Texas. Again, we'll be waiting to hear more from the U.S. Court of Appeals. This will certainly go back, at least will be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court again. So this is not the last of it. The Supreme Court, imagine, is really reading in on this and getting their thoughts together on this, as it will likely head back up. Though, Jill, in the meantime, we will see how enforcement works as Texas executes its own immigration enforcement on its border with Mexico alongside the federal government.
All right, to our next story, the rollout currently underway for the first over-the-counter birth control pill approved in the United States. Online sales kicked off earlier this week. It is called the O-Pill, and it's available right now at opill.com and also through Amazon. And soon it will be available in stores like CVS and Walgreens. So the FDA approved the O-Pill for over-the-counter use back in July. It is the first daily birth control cleared for sale without a prescription in the United States. The FDA says it's about 93% effective and generally safe for most people who could get pregnant, including those as young as 15 years old. Currently, there are no age restrictions on the drug sale.
Yeah, one thing that we're watching closely is to see whether any states here try to pass their own legislation in regards to the O-pill, right now available in all 50 states. But as we've seen with other birth control measures, some state legislators may try to pass limits on this. Right now, it appears the retail price for this is about $20 a month, and there are discounted 3-month and 6-month supplies. The goal here in this approval by the FDA was to really help women in rural areas that have difficulty getting a prescription here. And so they've opened up those websites. You mentioned they'll be available in some larger pharmacies soon. And it does come as we got some new numbers this week when it comes to abortions in this country. The number of people getting that procedure has risen by about 10% over the course of the past 4 years here. That is between 2020 in 2023. The numbers come to us from the Guttmacher Institute, which is a pro-abortion rights research institute. It found that there were more than 1 million abortions in the U.S. last year. That is the first time since 2012 that the number has crossed the 1 million threshold. And it does come as medication abortions are more common than ever. They made up about 63% of abortions in 2023. That is up from 53% in 2020. Last year was the first full year since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In that time, more than a dozen states have largely banned abortion. And we've been bringing you the debates that have been happening within a number of states. The Supreme Court also was hoping not to have to rule on the issue again after that ruling in 2022. But alas, more restrictions and cases keep coming their way. They are currently deciding on a case in regards to mifepristone that is a key pill in medication abortion. So we're going to be looking for that ruling in June. Arguments are scheduled this month, and then the ruling again will be later this year. The case does reinforce abortion as a key campaign issue. Democrats have been campaigning heavily on it. They've been seeing a lot of success, even in traditionally red states, when it comes to the issue of abortion. And so you can watch out for that over the course of the coming months here.
All right, plenty of news coming up, but we want to first thank a couple of our sponsors this week, starting with Factor Meal. We are definitely pressed for time, especially in my house, and still want to eat healthy and nutritious meals. So that's why we are so excited about Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. They can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared and dietitian-approved ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. And you get to skip that extra trip to the grocery store, the shopping, the prepping, and my least favorite part, the cleaning up, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality that you need. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes. So all you've got to do is heat and enjoy. You could choose from over 35 weekly meals. It is flexible for your schedule. You can get as many or as few as you need by choosing between 6 and 18 meals per week. You could also pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. They also have my favorite, cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. Ready in just 2 minutes, no prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/monews5050 and use that code monews50 to get 50% off. Again, that is code monews50 at factormeals.com to get 50% off. Great deal, Mosh.
And we want to thank another great partner for us here at Mo News, Athletic Greens. We're always talking about health trends, nutritional trends, how hard it is to get all of your vitamins. Well, one way we have found to get all the important ones here is Athletic Greens AG1 powder. I first tried it almost 2 years ago now as I was trying various vitamins after meeting with a nutritionist. And what I love about AG1, it's just one scoop with a glass of water in the morning. It's easy, it's quick. It lets you get on with your day knowing you've got more than 75 important ingredients, tons of vitamins and minerals, pre and probiotics for your gut and for digestion. It's effectively a nutritional insurance policy as you begin your day. And they have a great deal right now for the Mo News community. With your first purchase of AG1, Athletic Greens is giving Mo News listeners a free 1 year supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs of AG1 for you to take on the go. It is really easy. Just head over to drinkag1.com/monews. That is drinkag1.com/monews. That's where you can just try it just once or get a discounted monthly subscription. Again, drinkag1.com/monews for this special deal and to start to take ownership of your health. All right, let's get now to today's speed read. Jill just reminded me that today is Wednesday. I was convinced it was Tuesday. Thank you, Jill, for keeping me in order.
Which is saying a lot because I feel like I never know what day it is. And it's hard because we do record this podcast the night prior. So I'm always kind of like, wait, what day is it? Sunday is Monday. Anyway.
Yeah. During the ads, we have a debate about things. Sometimes stories, sometimes what day of the week it is. Point, Jill.
Okay. From CNN, gas prices are gradually going back up for the first time since late last year. Prices at the pump are now higher on a year-over-year basis. It is a trend that industry experts expect to continue in the coming weeks and months, especially if Russian oil facilities continue to get hit by drone attacks from Ukraine. This is an unwanted development for consumers heading into the spring. It is also a problem for the White House and Federal Reserve officials hoping to declare victory over inflation. The national average price for regular gas climbed to $3.47 a gallon this week, according to AAA. That is up from $3.45 a year ago. It's the highest price we have seen since Halloween. The national average has jumped by about 7 cents in the past week and 40 cents since mid-January. The highest recorded price, though, for gas was in June of 2022, when a gallon averaged over $5. Most remember that.
I do. And by the way, it was worse off in California, where they were seeing $7 gas, $8 gas, etc. So just to recap here, gas averaged $3.47. Could be less where you are, could be more where you are. That is the national average. At the same time, they do not expect this to get above $4 and not anywhere near that $5 price from a couple of years ago, Jill. And we should mention that much of this increase is normal from late winter into early spring. It happens every year as refineries shut down for maintenance during this time of year. They switch over to summer fuel. There's a different blend of fuel we use for our cars in the summer that puts off less emissions in the summer and costs a little bit more. So this is a typical trend line. It also comes as demand for gas increases during warmer months as we go drive, we take our family vacations, etc. And it does come with my favorite fact, Jill, that the U.S. is pumping more oil than any country in history right now, more than 13 million barrels a day. Though we should note, while we're pumping 13 million barrels a day, we use about 21 million barrels a day. And depending on the type of oil, the region of the country, sometimes we sell some of that crude, because we should note there are many types of crude oil, thick and thin, and they're used for everything from motor oil to jet fuel to Vaseline. So a lot of complexity here to the oil market. We have a deep dive over on the Mo News Premium Instagram account if you're interested in more details there. But the U.S. is crushing it as far as production. We've never produced more than this, which is an element here as to why prices will not get too high. But at the same time, a lot of intangibles, a lot of things we can't predict, including as we head into hurricane season this summer, what that means for Gulf Coast refineries, as well as offshore oil rigs. Another problem here that makes things a bit more unpredictable, Russian energy infrastructure that's being destroyed in the Russia-Ukraine war. While we're not buying Russian oil, other countries are. And a reminder here that oil is a global market. The other concern right now, what we've been telling you is going on in the Red Sea. The Houthi terror group that has been targeting various shipping vessels that are headed through the Suez Canal and the Red Sea, forcing many companies, including a whole bunch of oil companies, to move their oil around Africa, which is a much farther distance. It costs more. And when things cost more to the companies, they pass along that cost to you and me. And so that's where we're at right now. So again, mid threes right now, slightly more than we saw in the fall, slightly more than last year. And they do not believe it'll get above $4.
To the Middle East, from Axios, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to send a senior delegation to Washington in the next few days to talk about an alternative strategy to an Israeli ground invasion of Rafah. This is a signal that both Biden and Netanyahu are trying to avoid a public clash over an Israeli invasion of the area, where more than a million displaced Palestinians have taken refuge. Netanyahu recently reiterating for the third time that he has approved plans for an operation in Rafah to destroy the remaining Hamas battalions there. Israel estimates that about 4 of the 24 battalions are there. Netanyahu has stressed, including in interviews with U.S. television networks, that whomever opposes an Israeli operation in Rafah basically opposes the destruction of Hamas and doesn't want Israel to win the war. But the possible operation is a key issue. It was a key issue in the phone call between Biden and Netanyahu on Monday. It was their first in over a month. Biden reportedly telling Netanyahu that while he shares the goal of destroying Hamas, that there must be a coherent strategy to do that. Biden proposed that Netanyahu send this team of senior military intelligence and policy officials to Washington to hear the U.S. concerns and lay out an alternative approach that will not include a major ground invasion. Netanyahu agreed that delegation will arrive in Washington later this week or perhaps early next week.
So this is an answer to the Israelis saying, well, if you don't think we should do that, what would you do, America? And it appears here they're considering various alternatives, including building shelters for the nearly 1.5 million displaced Palestinians currently in Rafah. There's another idea apparently being circulated by the Americans to conduct a joint U.S.-Egyptian-Israeli operation to destroy Hamas tunnels that lie between Gaza and Egypt. That's why Rafah is so key. It is a border town there and is seen as a place where about a quarter of the remaining Hamas leadership and military commanders are hiding right now, along with more than 100 Israeli hostages. And so ultimately here, the U.S. says we can achieve your goal of limiting arms smuggling, limiting Hamas capabilities without a full-scale invasion. So We'll see what comes of that. It comes as the negotiations continue for a ceasefire deal and Israeli hostages for Palestinian prisoners deal. It really comes down to numbers here. Hamas demanding a lot of prisoners, including a number who have committed murder and are serving life sentences inside Israel. The Israelis not entertaining a large number, but some in exchange for hostages. So that continues to be central to that negotiation. And then, of course, there's the American election, which is at the backdrop here of all of this. It's one of the reasons why Biden, Chuck Schumer, Democrats have been increasingly critical of Israel of late. They're trying to assuage the concerns of an increasing number of Democrats that the White House has been too close to Israel and too supportive and trying to draw a starker line here. And then there's Donald Trump, who has not said much, but when he has said something during this campaign about the Middle East, it's gotten some attention. And so he was on a podcast of a former advisor of his and made these very stark remarks. Take a listen.
Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel will be destroyed.
So there you have Donald Trump basically telling about 6 million Jews in the U.S., that is the estimated population, that if they vote against him, they hate their religion, they hate Israel, and they should be embarrassed. Jill, it has been hotly debated, these remarks in the comments of our Instagram account where we posted a clip. Some people saying, yeah, no, Trump is Jewish Americans' best hope. Others saying this is beyond the pale, this is anti-Semitic, and this is threatening language to American Jews.
And the reason that it would be anti-Semitic is because it's basically implying that Jewish Americans would have dual loyalties to both the U.S. and to Israel.
Right. That's the argument against it. And the Republicans say, well, look at the policies. And by the way, that's what Trump says. He defends these remarks. He's like, listen, I was tougher on Iran. I was more supportive of Israel in terms of allowing them to do what they want to do. So why would you vote against me? Now, this is not the first time Trump has said something like this. He has said variations of it in the past, but we're in an election year here. And it does come at a time post October 7th, where Jews in America are facing a record number of anti-Semitic incidents and attacks. And so this comes amid that fear and amid that reality. And it comes after Chuck Schumer, the top Democrat, Senate Majority Leader, and the highest ranking elected Jew in America, was very critical of the Netanyahu government, very supportive of Israel, he says, trying to draw a contrast by saying the Prime Minister of Israel is not effectively representing Israel and there should be new elections there, but we're supportive of the country overall. They're trying to draw that line. Trump has his own piece to say about this. The White House responding to Trump's remarks by saying there is no justification for spreading what they say are toxic, false stereotypes that threaten fellow citizens. Jill, I should note that several people immediately responded to that last night by saying this sort of reminds me of something Biden said a few years ago. We pulled up those remarks on the Instagram account. He was on a talk show back in 2020 telling Charlamagne the God, who's a very influential talk show host, that if you don't vote for him, you're not black, arguing that black Americans, if they vote for Republicans, are voting against their interests. Now, Biden the next day apologized profusely for it. It was just as he was about to name Kamala Harris the first black female VP choice in the country. But again, he said, you're not black if you don't vote Democrat. And so some Republicans are saying, well, you know, Trump is effectively saying the same to the Jews, though I don't see him apologizing for it anytime soon. He certainly doesn't feel the need to do so. But still, notable remarks we wanted to make a point of mentioning on the pod today.
And also want to quickly mention, according to Pew Research Center, Jewish Americans for decades have been some of the most loyal, democratic, and politically liberal constituents, again, going on years. But we'll see if that changes.
Yeah. And by the way, it comes as today, if you're not already a subscriber to the Mo newsletter, we're diving into a couple other constituencies that have been very loyal Democratic voters in recent decades that have been gradually shifting towards Republicans. Here we're talking about Latino voters and Black voters. Yesterday, Biden made an appeal to Latino voters. More and more, you're seeing Latino voters move towards the Republican Party. And one of the most loyal groups to Democrats, Black voters, in this case, Black men, starting to move towards Republican. So there's a lot of shifting happening here, and you can read more about that in the Mo newsletter.
From Axios, global ocean surface temps have been at record highs for just over a full year, worrying scientists who don't have a complete understanding of what is driving this trend March 14th marked a full year in which global ocean surface temps were the warmest on record. Conditions at sea have affected the weather on land, worsening flooding rains in Los Angeles, San Francisco, the east coast of the U.S., and other parts of the world. And they have also brought damaging marine heat waves to the ocean, devastating marine ecosystems from the North Atlantic basin to Australia's Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah, you might have seen those pictures of those bleached coral reefs because the water is getting so hot. Now, it's not a surprise that ocean temperatures are elevated this year. It is an El Nino year, which is an event that happens in the tropical Pacific Ocean every few years. And those events typically feature warmer waters in the tropical Pacific. That then transfers more heat into the atmosphere, and you tend to see higher ocean temps in El Nino years. But scientists say that these record numbers that they're seeing in this past year, that El Nino cannot explain all of that. And so that's why they're pointing the finger at climate change. And it comes as glaciers lost more ice last year than at any time since 1950. So we're going back about 75 years there since record keeping on the glaciers first began. And sea ice losses from Antarctica were equivalent to losing the landmass of France and Germany combined last year. So all of this worrying scientists as they try to get a sense of where we are when it comes to climate change, where we are when it comes to a warming Earth. And of course, warm waters impact weather. Weather impacts where we live, impacts crops, impacts droughts, floods. And so last year, they're seeing that this increased heat contributed to an increasing amount of what they call food insecurity, people not getting a sufficient amount of food. More than 300 million people last year were food insecure, which accounts for just under 5% of the world's population.
Okay, now to a story from the New York Times that I thought was particularly interesting given some of the debates happening in the United States about women in the workplace and federal policies on maternity leave. This is looking at what's going on in Japan. Japan's labor market has a lesson for the Fed. Women can surprise you. There is a longer running trend happening in the Japanese economy that could prove interesting for American policymakers. Female employment has been steadily rising, and it happened partly by design. Over the last 10 years, the Japanese government has tried to make both public policies and corporate culture more friendly to women. The goal was to attract a new source of talent at a time when the world's fourth largest economy faces an aging and shrinking labor market. The country has one of the lowest birth rates in the world. Still, even some of the people who were around when the Womenomics policies were designed have really been caught off guard by just how many Japanese women are now choosing to work. One of the advisors who worked with the Japanese government while it was instituting the policies say they thought at the time that they might be able to get about 800,000 women into the labor force. But in fact, they've seen about 3 million actually join, although some of them are part-time.
Jill, this has many people asking here in the U.S., are there lessons here in the U.S. for what Japan is doing? But just to give you context, according to the World Economic Forum Global Gender Gap Report, the U.S. ranks about 40 in the world when it comes to equal treatment of men and women. Japan ranks past 120 out of 150 countries ranked. So Japan's in the bottom 20 there. So they had a lot of work. They still have a lot of work to do there in a culture where women have not been given many equal rights in the workplace and still do a large propensity of the housework. As far as labor force participation, which is what we're talking about in this scenario, that Japan has been able to improve the number of women in the workplace, the U.S. actually once had a much higher female labor force participation rate when it comes to other advanced economies, but now has been surpassed by Japan and other countries as far as percentage of women in the workforce. These days, about 77%, about 3 out of 4 women in the U.S. have a job or are looking for one. In Japan, it's just slightly higher than that, 83%, but that's up from 74% a decade ago. So they have certainly made a lot of improvement. The Japanese government has been really focused on policy moves, such as increasing childcare and other policies that they're trying to use to get women into the workforce. And again, as you noted, it comes at a time in Japan where they have a very aging population. And in order to continue productivity, continue to grow the economy, they have to figure out ways to get more women into the workplace. The question here in the U.S. is, as we face, you know, a gradual birth rate issue, not as stark as Japan, but certainly an issue, is whether state governments, federal government is going to do more to support women in the workplace. It's certainly an issue that we've discussed a lot on this podcast and over on Instagram, more family-friendly policies for women, including childcare and leave policies.
From Vanity Fair, another image released by Buckingham Palace, this one nearly a year old, has evidence of being digitally manipulated, according to the internal photo wire service Getty Images. The photo in question is of the late Queen Elizabeth and 10 of her great-grandchildren. It was purportedly taken by Kate Middleton, Princess of Wales, during a family gathering at the royal family's Balmoral estate. The picture was originally released in April of 2023 on what would have been the late Queen's birthday, but it now carries an editor's note on Getty reading, "Editor's note, image has been digitally enhanced at source." According to the British news outlet The Telegraph, the group portrait has inconsistencies, including the pattern on the Queen's skirt, shadows indicating editing around Prince George and Prince Louis's faces, as well as several discrepancies in the sofa and carpet pictured in the image that point to digital manipulation. Like, what is happening over there?
Let me translate that for everybody. Basically, what they're alleging is that the Queen wasn't there with all of her great-grandchildren. They pasted some of them in. That is the allegation here based on the discrepancies.
Which is pretty insane, Moshe, when you think about it.
Well, and people are saying, well, what's the point? You know, everyone photoshops. Well, this is the royal family. These are historic photos, right? This was published by thousands of publications around the world saying this is the Queen and her great-grandchildren. Jill Notable, by the way, she had 12 great-grandchildren. This photo, where maybe some of them were pasted in, was only 10 of them. Do you know who wasn't in the photo? Harry's two kids. So it was seen as sort of a poke at Harry and Meghan. And if you're going to paste in the great-grandkids, why not just paste in their kids too, since we're playing with Photoshop here? So the point here is there were definitely politics played internally. There's questions as to whether, again, this happened because this is the Queen and her great-grandchildren and, you know, the head of state of England, a historic figure. So there is a difference here between my family photos, your family photos, Jill, photos, you know, people who listen to this podcast, but on Instagram, and the royal family of England sending this to the media saying, check out this photo of the Queen and her great-grandchildren on, you know, this occasion.
I also think that there is a difference between photoshopping to just maybe take out a line here or there, or to maybe make yourself look a little bit better, enhancing
it. Give yourself a little digital Botox, right?
Versus fully manipulating a picture and, right, and adding a person.
Right. Louis and George weren't there, but like, let's paste them in for the hell of it.
Right. Like, the issue with the Kate Middleton picture is that some are saying there was never even an original picture that they used, that it was literally a composite of different pictures taken at different times.
Reinforced by the fact that when the agency said, listen, this was really edited, can you guys just send us the original, like, without all these crazy edits? And Pella said, nope, that's what you get. Reinforcing the idea that maybe there was no photo. Maybe they were not all together at that time. And so here is another historic photos, which now has publications going through a lot of royal photos looking for issues and analyzing stuff, which is why it actually came up at the White House, by the way, because we don't always get photographers into every single event at the White House. Sometimes photos are distributed by the White House. And so it was asked of the White House last week, like, hey, do you guys do this? And they're like, no, we absolutely don't do this. But now when you get official photos beyond places like North Korea and Vladimir Putin in Iran, you know, like England, a democracy where there's transparency, et cetera, they're going to view this with a literal magnifying glass, Jill, to analyze if this was a photo that was actually taken.
And by the way, we talked about yesterday that first video footage of Kate since her abdominal surgery, not necessarily stopping the conspiracy theories.
Most of them. But then some people just, they love the conspiracy theories.
We're looking at you, Andy Cohen.
Yeah, or he might have just been having fun. Either way, we are all awaiting Kate's return next month around Easter. That's what we're being told.
And finally, from USA Today, NFL player Travis Kelce is in discussions to host a reboot of the quiz show Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader for Amazon Prime Video. In contrast to the original version of the show, which pitted regular people against a panel of child contestants, the reboot will reportedly feature celebrity guests. That is according to Variety.
Yeah, you might remember the show from like 20 years ago with Jeff Foxworthy. Remember him? He had that whole shtick about being a redneck. You know, you're a redneck if. He also hosted Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? It is interesting, Jill, because all the streamers are getting into game shows as well. They're cheaper to produce. And also you can batch shoot them you can shoot a lot of episodes at once, as opposed to these really expensive dramas that they've been producing. Not to say they won't do that, but they're looking to diversify their content. Of course, Kelce has already become a household name, thanks to becoming Mr. Taylor Swift this past year. And he did do a bit of acting. Apparently, he starred in a Showtime comedy a few years ago. Now to On This Day in History. We begin in the 1800s. On this day in 1852, Harriet Beecher Stowe's influential novel about slavery called Uncle Tom's Cabin was first published in book form. Staying in that decade, on this day in 1854, 170 years ago today, the Republican Party was founded by slavery opponents in a schoolhouse in Ripon, Wisconsin. Slavery had ripped apart a previous notable party known as the Whigs back then. The anti-slavery Whigs began meeting in upper Midwestern states. They would go on to form their new party, the Republican Party, in 1854. They would put up a candidate for president in 1856, not win then. But their first big win for the White House would happen in 1860 when they put up a certain man known as Abraham Lincoln to be president. That was the Republicans' first big win at the White House. By 1876, there was this division where the Republicans were popular in the North, Democrats in the South. And that begins to flip finally about 70 years later when FDR wins as a Democrat from the North and the Republicans gradually through the 60s and 70s become a party of the South. All right, we end here with a couple lighter items. A happy 60th birthday to Lucky Charms. On this day, General Mills introduced Lucky Charms cereal. Jill, was Lucky Charms ever one of your favorites growing up?
Still is.
Really? I was always a Golden Grahams person. I can never get into the Lucky Charms. I didn't like the consistency of the hard marshmallows. Like, I know some people really love them. Never was my thing.
It does remind me of astronaut food.
Mm. I hear that, the dehydrated marshmallow.
Yes, but I don't have Lucky Charms for breakfast. I almost just take it for something sweet, like almost like a dessert.
Yeah, let's be clear. The vast majority of cereals in the cereal aisle, they're really desserts disguised as breakfast. Jill, we might lose some potential sponsors there with that comment. And we'll end here with a musical item dedicated to you. 34 years ago today, Madonna released Vogue.
Dedicated to me?
You're a Madonna fan.
Oh, okay.
Aren't you a big Madonna person?
Yeah.
We're doing dedications now on the pod. You're like, I don't need that dedication. I'm like, I thought you were a big Madonna fan. I thought that would roll.
I'm looking over my shoulder. Is there someone else here? I do love Madonna. It is my decade. I do love a good Madonna song. So thank you. I will take that dedication.
Is it a big year for you, a big decade for you, a big artist for you? What more would you like?
All right, everybody. On that note, thank you for listening to the Mo News Podcast. If you like what you hear, share the... I'm sorry. Oh, my God. If you like what you hear, please share this with your friends. It will help us grow. Follow us and subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and review us in the App Store.
And check out the new Mo News The Interview Podcast. We have a new episode up there today on Haiti, diving in there. We got such great reviews. We'd put that up initially, as we do with all our interviews over on the Premium Pod. But we're making it available to everyone on Mo News The Interview. It's our newest podcast featuring conversations. And we'll have a lot more coming your way over on The Interview Podcast, now available on all of your platforms. So give that a follow and help us grow that podcast as well.
Moshe, maybe we should do a perk for premium subscribers, a dedication of On This Day, of some items of On This Day.
Well, clearly you didn't care for it. So maybe there's someone who will appreciate a dedication.
No, I feel great about it. Thank you. All right, everyone. Have a great day.
Later.
Thanks for listening to the Mo News Podcast.